This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Or something. Anyway, I distinctly remember already hearing that. I feel like I'm going traveling. It's like I'm time traveling or something. Time or something. Hi, I'm Ryan for the KBOO Youth from the KBOO Youth Collective. The theme of the month is time travel. Listen to the KBOO Youth Collective 6 to 7 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of every month. Hope you're there.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:03. Coming up next is the Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with host Lisa Loving. Today's guest is Jason Renaud, producer of the film Alien Boy, about the police killing of James Chassis. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Raven's Flight Creative, presenting an evening with author, comedian, inventor, and mustache enthusiast John Hodgman from The Daily Show. John Hodgman speaks at the Baghdad Theater Thursday, March 7th at 7 p.m. The Baghdad Theater is at 3702 Southeast Hawthorne, and accompanied minors are welcome. Tickets at cascadetickets.com.
It's 8:04, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, James Chassis' death in police custody became a rallying cry for justice that helped lead to federal sanctions against the city of Portland and its police bureau. We're live in Studio 2 this morning with Jason Renaud for a discussion about the documentary film of Chassis' life and death, Alien Boy. Jason, thank you for being here. It's been a long time coming.
Hey, thank you, Lisa.
Tickets are still available for Alien Boy, which is playing at Cinema 21. Can you just give us the dates real quick at the top? Because I need everyone in this town to go see that movie, straight up. I need everyone to go see it. Do you have the dates?
Sure. The film is playing at Cinema 21 in Northwest Portland from tonight until March 7th. You should take a look at the website. They'll be able to buy tickets there. You can also buy tickets at the door. Basic screenings are at 4 p.m., 7 p.m., and 9 p.m.
All right. Listeners, we're putting this question out today. You know, the issue of police accountability and mental health, these are such big issues. Just this morning, I just want to start out and ask people, did you know James Chassis, or did you know someone like him? We would love to hear from you. 503-281-8187. And I'm thinking of another case of a man named Dickie Dow, who was in a mental health crisis. I'm not even actually sure if you would say he was in a mental health crisis,
yes.
But he was beaten to death by the police. And a friend of mine who used to be a KBOO volunteer, she lived near him, and she came out during this incident, and after Dickie Dow was unconscious on the ground, she asked if she could give him CPR, and they refused, and he died on the street. I know there's other people that have experiences like this, and so today's a day. Let's just talk about this. Let's put it all on the table. 503-281-8187. Jason, tell us about this film, Alien Boy. It's a documentary. What's remarkable about it, I think, is that it's entirely made by, the entire film is made with police documents, video of the trial. Tell us the pieces of the film. What's in it? It's
right.
Not just someone standing there talking about what the police should do. It's very specific. Go ahead.
No, it's not really a criticism of the police per se. I'm an advocate for persons with mental illness, and we, in our organization, the Mental Health Association of Portland, really wanted to illuminate the issue of persons with mental illness and the police in a different way. And so we turned to an unusual tool for this, a tool that defeats a lot of politics and bureaucracy, the arts. But once the artist, Brian Lindstrom, got engaged and the film got started, the advocates got booted out of the room because advocacy all by itself does not make great art. You need to do a little bit more. You need to be a little bit more impartial, more independent, and follow the story. Listen to the witnesses. As Brian says, move towards the pain of the issue. And so the film, as it comes out 7 years later, is a very painful film to watch. It's a very difficult film to watch, but is, as you say, Lisa, it's a necessary film.
And we are talking about Alien Boy, which is a documentary about the life of James Chassie and his death in police custody. And the number to call, 503-281-8187. Is that right, or is it 231-8187? I think it's 231. Hey, this is a test to listeners who call all the time. Do I have the phone number right? But anyway, as I watched this film a few weeks ago, I was glad I was watching it on the small screen, frankly. So it starts out with interviews of witnesses, people who saw the arrest, the police arrest of James Chassie. Was it in 2006?
2006.
One summer day. Wasn't it a beautiful summer day?
In September.
So first you hear people giving recorded interviews with the filmmakers, Brian Lindstrom being the director, and our guest, Jason Renaud, is the producer. First, you see recordings of the people who were witnesses that were recorded by people that made the film. But the thing that really got me was also at the very beginning, there's this famous photographs of the scene, the arrest scene, which were taken by a waiter who worked in the restaurant across mm-hmm. the street. So basically, the filmmaker takes this image that the waiter across the street took of the arrest scene where James Chassie is still alive. He's hog-tied, basically, it looks like to me, on his face, on the cement. And there's more than a dozen police officers, emergency medical technicians, official people standing around, and they're drinking coffee. Just looking at that image, blown up on the big screen, It's chilling, and that's part of what is amazing to me about this film, is the simplest things. You might even say, in a way, the most banal details are the most remarkable. Jason, can you talk a little bit about who drove what was in the movie? I mean, was this all in the lap of Brian Lindstrom, the director? How did you get the material that is included in the film?
Well, you've asked a lot of questions.
Sorry.
Let's start with the sort of the process of the photograph. Is what you're seeing is James has just been beaten very badly by three police officers, kicked in the head, tased, and he's. He's fatally wounded. He's
dying.
They
chased him down and body slammed him because they said that they thought he was urinating in public. Go ahead.
Well, there's no evidence that he was urinating in public.
Right.
That's some testimony. A police officer who was afraid of being indicted spoke. The chase was very short, probably less than 5 feet. Essentially, James was walking towards his home through the Pearl District on a Sunday afternoon. He turns and looks over his shoulder, and police officers are bearing down on him. What accelerated the situation is James is terrified of police officers from incidences in his past where he had been beaten by police officers. James was also a person with schizophrenia, and he was very ill at the time and not able to respond appropriately to authoritative commands. So the beating ensued, and then that photograph that you described is the second step in the dehumanization of James. First is the physical beating, but then is the process of ignoring him. And that ignoring goes on basically for 90 minutes as he's left on the ground and then taken to jail and not to a hospital. The first moment an actual medical person sees him, she says, "He's too badly hurt to be here in jail. Take him to hospital." Then the officers who beat him put him back in the police car and drive him to really the farthest hospital imaginable, out to Mount Hood Hospital, and he dies on the way there. The dehumanization process continues as the police and the city of Portland and the police union and Multnomah County all balk at accepting responsibility for what happened to James and turn around to blame the victim. This dehumanization process, the city has done a lot of work to think about how to change this, but as we've seen in the shooting just last week of a ex-convict named Merle Hatch out at the Adventist Hospital, that is the strategy that the police use still, is blame the victim and dehumanize the victim.
And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in Studio 2 with Jason Renaud. He is the producer of the documentary film Alien Boy, which is playing at Cinema 21 through March 7th. And we have a couple of callers. Callers, we're basically asking people today, did you know James Chassie or do you know someone like him? 503-231-8187. I do know the phone number. We've got Sean on the phone. Sean, what's going on today?
Hey, good morning. I didn't know James Chassie, but I've met a lot of people like him. The other morning, I was watching Bloomberg Business News, and they were talking about, there were some financial analysts, and they were talking about what it would take to transform America's mental health system. Mm. And they were saying that from 2014 to 2021, a seven-year period, it cost something like $260 to $280 billion to Medicaid over that time period to really transform our mental health system.
That sounds about
And they said that, you know, as they said that number, they looked at each other and they started snickering and laughing like, oh, that's not going to happen.
That's right.
Like, not really a priority.
So, like, someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I've heard that the life expectancy for the chronically mentally ill in the United States is 25 years shorter than
that's
the average
correct.
American. And so what we're doing is a kind of euthanasia by neglect. If people don't become homeless, they become wrapped up in the criminal justice system. You know, it's like a systematized euthanasia. It's almost like Nazi Germany, except that we don't shove people in the gas chambers. We just neglect people to death. And I realize the focus of your film is on the police abuse of James Chassie, and I don't want to take away from that.
There's more.
But
there's
we
more
have to have this conversation about deinstitutionalization and putting the funds needed towards the mental health system to save people's lives. Thanks.
Sean, I think if you went and saw this movie, it might be a trigger for you. Trigger alert on Alien Boy, right?
Thanks for the warning.
Yeah, absolutely.
I still want to see it.
You do. And but a really huge part of this film is about the mental health system and exactly what you just described. Thank you for calling.
Talk about it, Jason.
Sean, you're exactly right. I'm a little concerned about the word euthanasia, but you're right. The system costs an enormous amount of money, and to repair it would cost an enormous more. And frankly, persons with mental illness are the most discriminated against persons on the planet. Let me ask you a question. Sean, are you still there?
No, we let him go.
Well, Lisa, let me ask you. How do you feel about someone with a mental illness working in the school where your children attend?
I know that there are people that do that already.
But how do you feel about
it? I feel good because I actually, I don't think I'm your typical person, but I feel like we all have something we all bring to it. And I know a lot of people with mental health issues who deal with them. And if we pretend like we're all antiseptic and we're all perfect and we staff the schools as if we were, it's not going to work for people because it's not real.
Well, persons
that's just
with,
my personal take.
Sure, but persons with mental illness are routinely discriminated against in employment. Mm-hmm. What about a police officer with mental illness?
Yeah, I think that's a huge
issue. How do you feel
issue.
About that?
I think that a lot
is
of
that
police.
Okay?
Well, I don't know if I get to decide whether that's okay or not, but I really appreciate you bringing that up because I think a lot of our officers do have mental health problems. Some of them have problems that are created by their jobs. And as a society, we don't even make room for them to talk about that or mm-hmm. admit that it's true, let alone do we reach into, you know, as we look at veterans with PTSD now, I think our officers have the same issues and we don't give ourselves or them the credit of treating police officers like human beings either. And I can only imagine what it's like when one officer with a significant mental health crisis is looking at someone else who's having a significant mental health crisis. They're probably both triggering each other, and trigger is an unfortunate word in that sense, but that's just me. I've been to this party before.
When an officer is in recovery from the mental illness or their addiction, they're probably the best person to be in that encounter. Mm-hmm. But persons with mental illness are discriminated against routinely in all sorts of institutions, in churches, in the courts, in science, in education, in employment, and certainly in families. And so to repair the system begins with ending that discrimination, and that's something everybody can do.
And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with Jason Renaud. He is the producer of the documentary film about the life of James Chassie. The film is called Alien Boy. It's playing right now at Cinema 21. We have a bunch more callers. We have Joanne. Joanne, what's your take?
Oh, God. Well, I just got seriously chronic fatigue from off and on again, years and years of psychiatric oppression in my life I can't do anything about. But I want to say one thing before I give an example of a recent one for me. You know, I've been hearing on cable off and on for some years that there are psychological organizations and that support torture. That is so, I can't, the words, so shocking, and that's not the best word for it, so shocking that people like that support torture. And another thing, way back, I don't know, in the 1970s maybe, before, there was a Democratic vice presidential candidate, a male, who couldn't run because somebody found out he had some mental health problems. Maybe I want to give you a recent example of my psychiatric oppression. I had a skin problem for a number of months, went to a primary care, they didn't take care of it right, they sent me to a Northwest dermatologist expert. She didn't do much good either, but she did a culture, and I had a hard time getting the report. But here's the report to show, a two-page fancy report. On the sidebar it says current medications, past medical history, and that's the top, psychiatric disorder, down further, autoimmune disorder, surgical history, family history, social history, allergies, hospitalization, and review of citizen. Now, in the paragraph, in the main, the meat part of it, history of present illness, a couple of sentences or several sentences down, charts, notes, review from primary care provider, the patient has a psychiatric disorder, the nature of which is unspecified in her chart. Talk up. What has that got to do with a culture? I mean, that's just, I've been dealing and living with and can't do anything about psychiatric oppression, but I'm glad to have the program. I hope it really does something.
Wow. Thank you, Joanne. And Joanne's putting a term on the table that I don't know if I've heard before, psychiatric oppression. This issue that we're talking about, you know, we talk about how if you're arrested, you get an arrest record, you get your mugshot on the internet, you get all these things. But if you spend time in a psychiatric facility, the same kind of thing happens, but you don't get a mugshot on the internet. These things follow you, the records follow you, and that's probably why officers, police officers, other people don't want to deal with the system, and they don't want to ask for help because they assume psychiatric oppression, this stuff is going to end up in my medical files, and maybe they won't give me morphine when I need it. Things like this. Can you just talk about that a little bit, Jason? I mean,
well, as just an expression of discrimination is the issues around the stigma in one's personnel file, or if a police officer does need help, they may balk at getting help because of the stigma around from fellow officers, or the feeling that they might not be promoted, or the feeling that someone might tell their family. It's a very complicated situation, and it's really incumbent on all of us to take the air out of this balloon and start to think about this a little bit more compassionately.
Turn the problem around in our minds and look at it from a different perspective. And we are talking about the film Alien Boy. It's a documentary about the life and death of James Chassie. And we've talked about, we have a couple more callers, but I just wanted to take a minute to fill in a few blanks about this film. Mm-hmm. Alien Boy, listeners, if you haven't seen it, playing at Cinema 21 through March 7th. I need to insist that the entire city of Portland goes and sees this movie. I have to insist. I normally wouldn't. If you do have PTSD issues, this film will be a trigger for you. And, you know, half the film obviously is about the events of that day and how these three police officers interacted with James Chassie in such a way. And I mean, the details, I thought I knew everything about this case, and I did not. But the other half of the story is James Chassie's life. You know, his youth as this incredible artist and how mental illness just descended upon him like Sylvia Plath's bell jar. Mm-hmm. I don't know who's read The Bell Jar. That's what The Bell Jar means. It's one of those jars, those bell-shaped glass domes that she wrote in her book. And it was a novel, but it was It reflected her real life experience, Sylvia Plath, going back to art. But the bell jar would descend upon her, and she could see out of it, but she couldn't communicate with the people outside the jar. That's what the bell jar meant. Really want to recommend that. Actually, you should probably pick up some Sylvia Plath as well, because, you know, we're talking about issues that are old, and we've been dealing with them for a long time. And we have a couple callers. Let's go back to the lines. We've got Brian on the phone. Brian, what do you think?
Hey, good morning. Well, I'd like to present this perspective. I want everybody to look at this. We paid the officers to go out and kill James Chassie. And how many officers did it take? I don't know. There were quite a few there. We also then paid for Mr. Chassie to go to the hospital and be pronounced dead. We paid. And I'm saying we because the community is the ones who directly funds the police. Now we're having to pay off the family, which is rightly so. I'm not disagreeing with anything there. Now we have a film that is going to be, we're going to pay to see the film. So I would like a summation of the money that we spent on paying and how we will continue to pay, you know, in tourism dollars, in resident dollars, you know, people who are going to achieve a level of PTSD from just being afraid of cops, et cetera. And that's not, that's not a shallow issue. And we should look at that money, and that is the money that we are not spending on mental health. And that money, if it went to mental health, how constructive could it be? But we turn that money into a destructive force.
Well, Brian, I think that that's a very astute question, how we look at the financial impact of these things.
Thanks for calling,
I have one more point. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't mean to interrupt you at all. I know you didn't interrupt me. But I would like to say this. As a person who finances the police force in this city and in the county, we are giving that police force its blessing. Because James Chase was a beginning, wasn't it? I mean, how many other people have been shot and killed over this? And the police force has not even batted an eye. They've stood up, and we pay for all the trials, all the evaluations. We have financed Ron Thrashauer. We have financed this guy who is a Nazi who is training police officers. I mean, he's an avowed Nazi. And we are financing it. So when I see James Chase, and when I see these situations, I am guilty, and I think we need to start acknowledging that we are guilty of financing this. That's all I have to say.
Thanks for calling, Brian. I do want to make the statement that comparing going to see this film with paying the damages that for the things that the police did is kind of like you're definitely comparing oranges and screwdrivers there. But the rest of it, just looking at a cost benefit analysis is never a bad idea. Not that I'm being a big capitalist pig or anything like that. How much money? I'm not the queen of really liking our governor Kitzhaber, but I do respect his attempt to try to flip some of these formulas. Like, how can we figure out a way to put the money in the front end of the machine and not the back end? Because it's a much cheaper. Prevention is always cheaper. But I mean, Jason, the system.
Actually, to repair the system would cost far, far more than to lose some of these trials or settle some of these cases. It's actually less expensive in the net to settle in court than it is to repair the system in general. So that is difficult for people to reconcile, but I think it's the case, and it would quickly turn around if that weren't the case. Mm-hmm. So we do believe that there's some justice in the courts, but we haven't got there yet. There have been no indictments of officers in Portland in memory for use of force. There have been, in the public record, in the newspapers, about 240 persons killed or grievously wounded by police officers in the Portland area, not just in Portland, since about 1980. Actually, Washington County far outpaces Portland in the recent years. It's pretty dangerous to go out there to Hillsborough. But the impact, I think, that's most impossible to calculate is the pause that a mother might have in calling for help when her son or daughter is really in need of it, and thinking that by calling for help, my son or daughter might be harmed and not helped. That pause is where people get hurt. And even though we've criticized individual officers here, Portland police officers in general do a remarkable job on a daily basis with people who are grossly psychotic, drunk or loaded, and we never hear about those cases. Right. And we need to understand that these officers are in a difficult position dealing with people who are very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And vast majority of situations turn out safe for everyone.
When the Aaron Campbell shooting, that was one that I covered. Is it James Quackenbush, Officer Quackenbush of the Portland Police Department, actually talked him out?
Yes.
Officer Quackenbush lectures about how to deal with people in crisis situations. He's actually a really beloved guy.
Right.
And so he's one that we can point him out and say, Officer Quackenbush rocks, and
right.
he did specific things.
And if Officer Freshour had not pulled the trigger, that's it. We'd never know about that.
That's right. That's right. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in Studio 2 with Jason Renaud. He is the producer of the documentary film about the life and death of James Chassie. That film is Alien Boy, and it's playing at Cinema 21 through March 7th. And I also, before we go to the phone lines, I want to say really quick, Brian, James Chassie's not the beginning of this. Actually, as I was mentioning, Dickie Dow, the police killing of Dickie Dow was back in the 90s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even know. I think it's fair to say that we don't even know necessarily every case in which something like this has happened over the past, God knows, period of time. A lot of the statistics that we look at with the Portland police are actually pretty recent. And the Portland Police Bureau is it 150 years old, 100 years
yeah.
old? So we're not even looking at the real true history. And we do have a bunch of callers. The number to call is 503-231-8187. When we have Jessica on the phone. Jessica, what do you think?
Yeah, hi. I just want to, first of all, honor James. He's kind of a sacrificial lamb in this scenario because he does represent many cases. And then I just have to get my composure because I am very emotional. Then I just want to thank Jason and you all for putting this on our porch, in our site. I am a psychiatric nurse practitioner. I call in rather frequently these days. I have a mentally ill brother who's incarcerated, and I work with our community, and I have lots of stories about my clients not being able to get into the hospital, and I just want to help people understand that I've been reactive. I've gotten angry at police, and I've gotten angry at PRs, and I've gotten angry with the community for not understanding, but then in my wisdom, really what it comes down to is we need to try to understand. We need to be educated on mental illness because it is a biological brain-based disease. We are allowing our homeless population is predominantly addicted and mentally ill, and those issues run together. It is a social concern that we have to embrace and take care of because they are our modern, I don't know what you want to call it, oppressed. And we will spend a much less money if we give them a place to be. I find particularly I can't get my people into any kind of housing. They need help. Their brain isn't working. They can't navigate things. They need advocacy. They need compassion and understanding. It can be rather difficult when you have a mentally ill person that can't embrace their own mental illness because the very organ that allows us to have insight is damaged. But this whole thing with we have to be a danger to ourselves or others before we can get somebody help. That thing needs some serious scrutiny because we are waiting for people to be in crisis before we will intervene. And then we need more intermediate places for people to reside and be taken care of with those that are educated. And I also want to put in a plug for the CIT-trained officers. We have programs where we can educate our police forces that protect our communities about mental illness. And there's NAMI, there's family to family, which is free, where if you have a loved one who's mentally ill, you can learn about the neurobiology. It really helps you get your own emotions off of it and see it for the problem that it is. It is an illness. And there's lots of controversy around it, but we need to take care of these people.
Thanks, Jessica. Those are great ideas. I was honored that the longtime steward of Family to Family, the great program run by NAMI for family members, came to the film last night, Fern Mohmeyer, and she brought her son Dan, who she's been telling me about for 25 years. Finally met Dan.
NAMI, tell people who it is.
Well, the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill is a nonprofit national organization that provides a free class for family members who have someone who is severely and persistently mentally ill. It's the Al-Anon of mental illness.
Wow. All right, Jessica, thank you so much for calling. And we have another caller. We have Leah on the phone. Leah, what's going on? Maybe we just let the magical engineering pixies got like a phone in every hand. Is that Leah?
Yes, it is.
All right, Leah, what's going on?
Well, I really enjoy listening to this. I haven't seen the film, but I think I will, but I am a recovery person. I worked on a counselor. I worked with mentally ill people when I was working on, you know, down at Bologna Joe's and street people. That's where I started.
You're
out.
You're an old-timer.
Yeah. I also have a grandson who was severely abused when he was small and has a lot of emotional mental illnesses, mm-hmm. with suicidal and stuff. So I have some track record here. When I worked in the prisons, one of the people who came was a guy who wrote We're All Doing Time, and we're all crazy. We live in a crazy system. We live in a crazy culture. We live in a crazy world. There's insanity all around us, and our attitude with money is also insane. And as long as we look at things from the point of trying to solve them with money, we won't make it. Money is just a tool. But there are so many other tools to use, like hands-on, people showing up, contribution, connection, community, reaching out, you know, all kinds of things that we could do. But as long as we look at this as just money, we're dead in the water. I believe that the major piece of the shift is a shift in consciousness, and we need to change our consciousness about money. It's coming. And it's slow, and things like this will push us towards that. So James Chassie was a hero. He gave his life so that we could start paying attention and become more aware. And well, we owe him a great deal.
Thanks, Leah. I hope to see you at the movie soon.
I hope so, too. Bye.
All right. Thanks for calling, and this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in Studio 2 with Jason Renaud. We're talking about his new documentary film, Alien Boy. And we have another caller. Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Joe. Did we say Joe?
Yeah.
Joe, what's going on?
I just happened to think of something at another angle is when that police officer disallowed that lady to do CPR on the, what was the kid's
Dickie
name?
Dow. Dickie Dow. Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy, don't you think he was bullied and roused in grade school, huh?
Yeah.
With a name like that? But anyway, back to the subject. Here's the angle to look at it at, I guess. I'm trying to phrase this properly. For the cop not allowing this lady to do CPR on a person, you know how there's a Good Samaritan law, for example, where you, as long as you don't go above your training, try to do some kind of procedure in an emergency medical situation, there's a thing, I think it's nationwide, called the Good Samaritan law. And so as long as you can prove in a court of law, I guess, eventually, possibly, that you didn't do work outside your training, you know, you can do, and anybody can do CPR. I mean, they've been having advertisements on TV almost 10 times a day lately here about, you know, push hard and fast 100 times, no rescue breathing, just do compressions. But if that ever happens to somebody again, the same situation, now that everybody has a cell phone, I would call 911 and say, we need EMS here at this scene. Mm. If they won't let you do it yourself, it's something as simple as just, you know, pumping 100 times a minute on somebody's chest, you know, mm-hmm. as long as they're supine. But if somebody that's in a medical legal position somewhere, if they could look up and see if that officer violated any kind of state medical treatment statute by any chance? It's probably a long shot, but you know where I'm getting at, right?
That case happened in 1996, and
yeah.
It was a very complicated scene where officers had been fighting with Dickey for several minutes, and there were dozens of people watching the fight, and so they were really in.
Okay, my question is, are you, by the way, I didn't catch your name and what your qualifications, but are you the, I think I heard a promo for this show, and it said something about a retired police officer, or are you a current police officer, or none?
No, you're totally confused with a totally different show. Thanks for calling, Joe.
No, wait a second. I'm just, well, never mind. Go ahead.
Thanks for calling, Joe. Appreciate your calling, and the number to call is 503-231-8187. We're live in Studio 2 with Jason Renault. He is, tell us your qualifications. Go ahead again. Put it on the record.
I've been working as a both paid and unpaid, as and for the most part unpaid, as a mental health advocate for 20 years, and I'm the producer of the film Alien Boy.
Mm-hmm.
The organization that sponsored the film, the Mental Health Association of Portland, we were able to reach out and receive donations for the film from over. And this is, I think, really one of the more interesting stories of the film. Over 1,400 people and companies gave to this film. Really, everyone we asked, there were homeless people who gave to this campaign, to this film. There were established foundations and companies that gave. There were extraordinarily wealthy people and very poor people. And just exemplifies that it was a grassroots, community-based response to this event that happened in our city. And people just felt that, well, I don't really know what happened. I read it in the paper, but I'd really like to see someone take a close look at what happened and bring that information back to us all.
And we are talking about the documentary film Alien Boy. It's at Cinema 21 through March 7th. I need to insist the entire city of Portland and the metro area as well. Go see that film. And we have the phone lines open. We're basically saying we would love to hear from anyone who knew James Chassie or someone like him. 503-231-8187. You know, you can go to the website alienboy.com. You could check out the trailer of the film. And, you know, Jason, I hear what you're saying about this is a film to try to tear down barriers between law enforcement and the community. I hear you loud and clear on that, because I do think a lot of these officers have PTSD. They're dealing with mental health issues of their own. And I don't necessarily think that every single solitary mental health issue is a question of brain chemistry, but I'm not an expert. I think sometimes experiential things in one's life can lead to a brain that doesn't work right and doesn't tell you how to navigate that three-dimensional world around
you. Yeah, that's certainly true, and we don't really understand it very well, but it appears to be that there's something also, a psychiatric injury that can happen. That's this post-traumatic stress disorder, where something can happen to you in the middle of your life, and bang, your thinking changes.
It's like a broken connection.
And that's very repairable with good treatment. And really one of the best outcomes of the wars we've been having is we've learned how to do this.
PTSD.
We've learned battlefield medicine and treatment for traumatic stress disorders.
And I do want to, I had the pleasure of seeing Alien Boy a few weeks ago, and I was weeping and crying and yelling at the screen. I did. I couldn't not do it. And probably any human being would do the same thing. And I want to just describe the film to you before we go back to the phone lines. Alien Boy. So the film, like half of the film is about the life of James Chassie, a local kid, a kid born here, grew up, became involved as an artist in the early punk rock scene. The kid had a million friends. He was incredibly gifted, a juicy artist. This film has tons of his poetry, his drawings, his zines. And then in his teenage years, as we talked about earlier, basically paranoid schizophrenia, it descended upon him. And his girlfriend, his teenage girlfriend, you know, and now she's being interviewed at, I think that we're all probably 40 and 50 years old now. She's looking back and saying, you know, at some point it wasn't Jim Jim anymore. And to me, that's one of the most compelling parts of the film, is his own personal life trajectory. So the film juxtaposes his life and his battles with mental health issues, with what happened to him on that day. And as you're getting to the end of the film, and I'm not going to cry right now, okay? But you're getting to the end of the film, the interviews with James Chassie's old childhood friends, his old friends who are now older, you have interviews with friends who say, yeah, I just ran into him just before that happened at Powell's, and we sat and we had tea, we had coffee, we talked about it. It was Jim. It was the guy that I remembered. You know, and another guy said, well, he wasn't exactly the same person, but it was wonderful, and I spent time with him. So you had a sense of someone who had lived through just a really devastating mental issues, was coming out the other side, and was maybe dipping again into the issue of maybe he was off his meds. I have friends who have lived with paranoid schizophrenia, and the meds are difficult. The meds are their own issue, because when we're talking about all of our family and friends and us, I'll say us, who have lived with mental health issues, I mean, you're talking about some of the best and brightest people in the history of our society, really. You are. And so when you look at what people's personal issues are with, should they take these meds? How do the meds make me feel? In my family's case, will the meds turn me into a different person? Will I lose my creativity that way? These are all issues. I feel as though this is all dealt with in this film. And it's not one person going, wah, wah, wah. It's people describing their lives and what happened. It's very immediate. It's very much happening. Yeah. And
this is a film for adults. It's a difficult film to watch. It's a film that, as Lisa, as you're describing, provokes a lot of gnashing of teeth and a lot of frustration. It's a film that people are talking about days later. Our hope now is that we're able to find a distributor to show this film. As you and I, we know this story, and Portland knows this story, and we've made this point here very clearly. What we now need to do is get this story out to the other cities in this nation. We learned a hard lesson here. And I just hope that other cities don't have to learn the lesson that we did.
But there's no question in my mind that this is a national issue. It's not a Portland issue.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing remarkable about the Portland Police Bureau. Statistically, they're comparable to any other comparable city. This is a what's interesting about why people in Portland think that this is happening more here is because we've just found this case that actively illustrates it and acceptably illustrates this problem for the majority. We selected James Chassie for a couple of reasons. We talked to a lot of families whose kids had been hurt by the police before this, or by hospitals, or by the jail. And frankly, James Chassie's family was white and middle class and educated and able to sustain a long campaign to justice. And most of the families for people who had been harmed that we spoke to didn't have those qualities. They would not be able to be an illustration that would be acceptable to all of us. So that's another form of discrimination. Not only a person who has a mental illness and has been killed by the police, but would be their story would be unacceptable. So, you know, James had a charming personality, and he was artistic, and he was attractive, and so we're willing to hear his story.
You knew him, Jason?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I knew James when he was 14, 13 years old, when he came to school with us. He'd had some trouble in other schools, but the school that he came to that I was at was perhaps a little more accepting of kids. We thought of each other as eccentric, but actually that eccentricity was often the first symptoms of those mental illnesses.
Hmm. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in Studio 2 with Jason Renaud. We're talking about his new documentary film, Alien Boy. It's playing at Cinema 21 through March 7th. And let's go back to the phone lines. We have Dan on the phone. Dan, what do you think?
Oh, I think it's a very critical thinking type of topic. And thank you for having me this morning. I don't have a huge background or certifications in nursing or mental health as
me
a
neither.
Doctor or anything. But I, you know, I did do 20 years in the Navy, and I saw a lot of mental health issues in families and things like that, losses. And I retired in 2009 and immediately took over a 114-bed Jerry Psych facility, which also had a 14-bed ECU in Southeast Portland.
Excellent.
And I tell you, we've missed the ball on a lot of things in our society, mainly on diagnosis. In my opinion, that's just opinion stated. But, you know, I heard you speak earlier about medications and effects and what's going to do to you. That's been a huge challenge in my industry now. I currently consult for an 80-year patient Jerry Psych facility. And, you know, we deal with quite the aggressive and misbehavior things that mental health and the disease process and all that stuff takes on with our elders and even, you know, our youngest resident is, you know, 42 years old, head traumas and stuff like that. But,
yeah, Dan, we just saw this case in Silverton a couple of days ago of a guy that was in his 80s, was he 83, and he got a gun, he just started shooting at the trailer park. And the police kind of, they didn't know what to do, and it was a major, major scene there. But I don't remember if they killed the man or not.
They did.
And it that was when I started thinking about, as you're talking about elders, you know, older people and mental health issues and the impact that Alzheimer's can have. I mean, our state just adopted its first Alzheimer's plan, but how it's, again, I mean, I don't know if people would characterize Alzheimer's as a mental illness. It's a physical illness. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of research that's never been done about it. But to think of the number of people who are developing Alzheimer's, who have guns in the house, it's like these things get to be, they're deep. These things are deep.
Yeah.
And what are your rights? But anyway, Dan, really appreciate your calling, and I hope you call again.
Thank you so much. That answered my question. The other question was where I get to see this film, and I'm looking forward to taking some of my nurses and stuff out to see that.
Bring a bunch of hankies now. Bring hankies, okay?
I heard that part. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you for calling, Dan.
Cinema 21. You can find it online and find it on 21st Avenue in Northwest Portland.
Yeah, it's right there, an independent theater. Thank you. And we do have some more callers. Let's go back to the phone line. We have Frank on the phone. Frank, what's going on?
Good morning. Hey. Hello?
Yeah, sir. What's going on?
Good morning. I have a question more than anything else. It's kind of a side, but with regard to these police officers who are doing these things and getting away with it, going after them and trying to prosecute them is a moot point. I mean, you have the police brotherhood, the union backing them up, the judges not, you know, doing their jobs. I'm just curious why nobody has gone after them in their personal capacity, not as police officers, but, you know, John Q. Public against John Q. Public, and asking them the questions: Are you trained in CPR? Yes. Did you administer CPR? No. Why not? And, you know, and going after them that way. And I'll take my answer off the phone.
Well, I think that's a great question. And what you'll see in the film is we were able to get access to the deposition videos that were made by the family's attorney, and you see the conversation between the family's attorney and the individual officers asking those penetrating questions. We knew at the beginning of this case that we would never win in the criminal court, and we knew that it would be terribly unlikely that we would win in the civil court, and we knew we would lose at City Hall, and we knew we would lose in the chambers at the county commission. So we needed another angle to tell the facts of this case, and that's why we needed to make the film, because we weren't going to win otherwise.
I want to ask you so many questions about that, but I know that we have cool people, more people on the phone. Frank, and again, what I hear you saying, Frank, is all right, the official channels aren't working. How about we relate to each other person to person like human beings? And I what strikes me about that, Frank, is, again, this concept of how are we going to reach into this bureau, this police bureau that's embattled. You know, somebody else called earlier, was it Brian? It wasn't Brian. I don't remember who it was that was saying, you know, the police don't have to do anything. They're not touched by this at all. It has no impact on them. That's not the case. These officers, in this case especially, they beat the hell out of each other behind closed doors. There's a lot of stuff that goes on behind closed doors that doesn't get, we don't find out what happens. You know, in the absence of information, the imagination rushes in, and we imagine that these officers are not penalized at all. But I think every officer that kills somebody is completely freaked out and broken by the experience. And I'm not really completely speculating. I've read some writings that officers do about what it means when they kill someone. In fact, I've seen some intelligent, reader comments on Oregon Live. I know, breaking news. And I saw this guy who was anonymous, and he was posting, I think it might have even been to a review of Alien Boy or some discussion of that film. And he was basically describing what it was like to kill someone. And this anonymous commenter, this reader comment, it was so, I feel as though our officers go through something that we're not allowed to know about because of that. Is it a thin blue line or is it an iron curtain? I don't know. But if we don't figure out a way to reach into that police bureau and support the officers that are trying to make a change, there's going to be a lot more bad stuff down the road. And to me, that's the true revolutionary thing.
That's part of that's civilian oversight. When we get engaged with those officers and ask them questions and listen to them and understand that they have we ask them to do a terribly difficult job.
Horrible, horrible, horrible things, including being our chief social services non-providers. It's like everything else falls apart, and then we dispatch these guys, and what are they supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know, to be fair. And so let's go back to the phone lines. We've got a couple more callers. We've got Katie on the phone. Katie, what do you think?
Hi, my brother has schizophrenia, and it started about when he was 18. And I have he's 5 years older than me, and I have watched him go in and out of jail and mental health facilities. But they just keep kicking him through. No one's really there to support him or help him on a daily basis. I just want to, it just should be in it should be everywhere that everyone understands that these mental health issues aren't going to go away, and as long as we're not talking about them, you know, front page news, then it's never going to get solved, and it's just heartbreaking.
We have a long history
of
exiling people who have thinking disorders like this to the outskirts of town, and these are we've been doing this for a while, and we really don't have the tools yet to change. We don't have medical services. We don't have religious answers. We don't have scientific solutions. As Lisa, as you were mentioning, the medications are really very difficult and challenging for a person to stay
blunt on. Instruments, not precision.
Yeah, and I think the pharmaceutical and science industry would say that too. They would say we're not satisfied with that.
Katie.
I see my brother take medications that have swollen his tongue up so bad that he bit through it. You know, I think that he's not even treated like a human being, even in the mental health facilities. Like, this has got to change.
Yeah.
Katie, honey, Jason, can you trot out again some of these really good organizations that provide support for families that are dealing with mental health issues?
Yeah.
There's some really good ones out there, Katie.
Part of the problem is that because he has his schizophrenia, our mother just, and I know this happens a lot with other families, they just don't have anything to do with them. And then because he's been in and out of so many different places, I've lost contact with him, and now I can't even find him.
Right, and that is one of the hardest stories of schizophrenia, is that the family disengages from the person, and often for really good reasons.
Katie.
No, it's not. I don't think it's ever a good reason. And I'm not trying to disengage from my brother. I just can't find him now.
Yeah. Katie, honey, if you leave your contact information with the engineer, we would love to help you with that. And I don't know what we can do, but that shocks that I almost cursed it there. And you can't do that. Please, Katie, don't hang up. We would like to get your email or something and help you figure out where your brother is, because I wonder if we could offer that service. And it's imperfect, but we would love to try.
Oh, I would love that.
Katie, thank you so much for calling. And Steve, the Magical Engineering Pixie, and Sky, the studio dog, are going to get your information. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Jason Renaud. He is the producer of a new documentary, Alien Boy. It's about the life and death of one of Portland's own, James Chassie. And that film is at Cinema 21 through March 7th. And I can see that we have another call on the line, but I can see that the Magical Engineering Pixie is trying to get the information from Katie. Katie had a lot to put on the table there. Jason, we have a few minutes left of the show. What do you think is the most important thing for people to know about this film, Alien Boy, in this case, the life of James Chassie. What's the most important thing for people to know about it?
Well, I think that what we learned from the case of James Chassie is that if you look carefully at these cases, you find much more than the media shows you on the first day. The facts of produced by the media were almost all wrong. And it took the community's input and engagement with the story to turn this around. Whereas someone like, say, James Jahar Perez, who was killed by the police a year or so before James Chassie, it was a big
James
story.
Jahar Perez, African-American gentleman. He was in the parking lot of something like a Handy Mart. He was in his car. The police came up. They said, get out of the car. Then they shot him, and they say he reached for something. He had a cell phone. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's right. And that was a high-profile case in Portland, which meted about maybe 40 news stories over a year. Well, James Chassie's story, because of the community engagement with it, meted about 3,000 news stories over 7 years and is still front page news. So when the community gets engaged with a problem, when the community starts to care, things start to change.
And we have another caller. Let's go for that last caller. Let's see if we can get them on the air. It's Mark. Mark, what's on your mind this morning?
Good morning. You mentioned earlier about the damage control involving blame the victim, and that's mm-hmm. the standard strategy that's employed. I called mm-hmm. City Hall, I called various commissioners, staffers, I called the mayor's office, and that damage control of blaming the victim extended right to the top.
Yep.
I was told by a staffer that James Chassie had endured a period of homelessness, which may have undermined his physical condition, and that his ribs breaking so dramatically was possibly the result of his being in a frail condition, mm-hmm. that his ribs somehow were made of different stuff mm-hmm. than your ribs or my ribs. And that went straight to the top,
yeah,
and that went... Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for calling, Mark. We're running out of show.
But yes, that was an accurate... That was a story that was promoted by the police bureau right after James was killed.
This thing about the ribs. This is one of the things that made me cry. We're running out of show. We're live in the studio for another minute with Jason Renaud. And Jason, again, how can people support you getting this word out on this film?
Well, we raised a lot of money to make this film, and we spent it all to make the film. And we ended post-production at $0, and that was perfect for our accountant. But now we need to get the film out into the rest of the world. So if you come and see the film at Cinema 21, or you come and buy a T-shirt or one of the great posters done by artist Mike King, then you're supporting the film to get out of Portland and on to the rest of the world.
All right, that's it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Jason Renaud. Go to alienboy.com for links to info about this issue and also a trailer for the film. It'll shock you. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. Thank you so much. This show will be podcast on kibu.fm by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Always look for their March 4th annual show. You know it's coming up. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
You better take the scuba before you dig in the grave. scoop before you dig in the grave. You better dig the scoop before you dig in the grave.
Say mama son, mama.
You better dig the scoop before you dig in the grave.
Tune in to Between the Covers every Thursday at 11 a.m. to hear interviews with locally and nationally known authors from both fiction and nonfiction. Between the Covers, only on KBOO Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is 9:01 a.m. Coming up, we've got an interview with Buck Parker with Kathleen Stevenson. On Political Perspectives, Buck Parker of Earth Justice, about protecting the Earth, the work of Earth Justice, and who owns the environment. At 9:30, Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock interviews Dr. Carolyn Baker, a psychotherapist, about personal spiritual issues in the era of devastating environmental news. At 10 here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a weekly report on occupied Palestine with Nora Barrows-Friedman and the electronicintifada.net. At 11, it's the Recovery Zone with host Stephanie Potter. At 11:30, Stephanie continues interviewing author Virginia Morell on her book, Animal Wise, The Thoughts and Emotions of Our Fellow Creatures. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and click on the little jar that says Donate Today.
You don't own me. I'm not just one of you.
This KBOO program is brought to you by KBOO Foundation and a grant from Ben's Les Schwab Amphitheater, presenting alternative rock band Cake and Icelandic rock band Sigur Rós over Memorial Day weekend. Cake and Sigur Rós tickets are available Friday at bendconcerts.com.
A little fun there with Leslie Gore and You Don't Own Me. Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Political Perspectives. My guest is Buck Parker, who has worked with the nonprofit Earth Justice since 1980. Earth Justice.